presentation. I have gone through the departmental presentation on emergency. That's a matter, first matter that we're going to deal with. We're not going to take the presentation because it's almost an update. I want them to speak off the cuff, both the department and our legal advisor, at least to update us as to where we are. You know that in the last meeting we had agreed that we're going to give them a period to go and rework a document and come back to us by week two. But we then said it's important that we are updated as to whether there is progress and whatever. And I'm going to allow Baba Shelembe and the legal advisor from the legislature to, from Parliament, to just walk us through. Not a presentation, not a formal presentation, just shoot from the hip. Are you fine, colleagues? Thank you. Madam Sheen, are you getting better? Okay.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, and colleagues. Thank you for this opportunity. I must again apologize for the rest of my team. They don't have this quick access card, so they have to queue at registration. They'll be coming to the church now, Chair. But that notwithstanding, then off the cuff, here comes our legal advisor. From the cuff, Chair, after the meeting of last Tuesday, the department, again, our legal advisor, met with the legal advisor for Parliament and discussed the issues which have been raised by both the committee members as well as the issues that have been raised by the legal advisor herself. So Chair, what we were going to take the committee through in this presentation was then the imaging convergence of how best to craft the provisions of the law, given the understanding that we are reaching on most of things, starting from the name itself, it still says invisible, and there's an issue about the e-fills, digital fills, which we have considered to digital fills is indeed the all encompassing. That then, when we accept that, then it trickles through the entire bill, we change whether it's fiscal, the digital bill, and that includes even the name of the institute itself. It ceases to be ICAMBA, National E-Skills Institute. It becomes ICAMBA, Digital Skills Institute. We have not had time to get the change of name of the entity formally adopted by the ministry.
No. Remember, the matter is before us, and the minister has got nothing to do with it. All we need is just an update as to how far you've gone. Whatever you think in the department, whether you adopt it or not, it doesn't arise. The bill is with us. The final word is with us. All we are asking you to do is indeed to look at the matters that we have raised, as well as matters that between the legal people they may have picked up. And I think more than anything, we actually need the way forward. So I don't need, that's why I'm not allowing you to present. I want you to just walk us through using your thoughts. Just where are we? It shouldn't take you 2 minutes, at most, three, at most four. And then the two lawyers, but I can see that you are all really trying to be one of the lawyers, which is not bad. And them finding common ground on the matters we've raised, and indeed in the crafting process, and indicating as to whether by next week we will have something on the before the committee. I don't want presentations anymore. I want a reworked bill crafted with different views, if there are different views, so that we can debate those aspects and then move forward, taking into account for them. And if there are gaps, for instance, that do not help us to move forward, what is it that is hanging up, and what are the measures that have been taken to close those gaps? I think that's what we need more than anything else. So don't get into the finer detail, the commas, and what have you. Whether that thing happens or not, it's not in your hands anymore, because the people that are making that decision are the members. Madam Julie?
Yeah, yes, I actually just wanted to reinforce what you're saying. Basically, what Shlembe should tell us, the two teams met. We will make next week, Tuesday, as a draft. You will receive the draft on such and such a day, and that's it. Because it is not for any further ministerial approval or anything. It's now in the legislative arm of government. And I think that must be clarified. Thank you, Chair.
If that is then indeed the direction of the committee, then we will be ready with something. In fact, even today in the presentation, we were making options of how we think certain things can be crafted. If the committee agrees with option A, then this is how it can be crafted. So we have kept it in the presentation, then we can easily, then if those amendments were going to be approved today, we were then going to put them in the draft.
Can the lawyer speak?
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. Chair, we did indeed meet last week, as was our instruction. We found that there are a number of policy issues for which there was a lack of clarity. And of course, Chair, you'll appreciate that those things need to be well established in order for us to move forward in the draft. And as I mentioned last week, we must draft from a perspective of understanding. And some of the issues that I raised last week, I was not comfortable with the responses received. The department undertook to do more research, because at the end of the day, Chair, whilst the bill does indeed technically reside with Parliament, those changes need to be changes that the department can indeed practically carry out. So when I raised issues, for example, as to what the target audience here is in terms of the educational institutions, I need the department to come back and say, these are the institutions that we are targeting. It's higher education, or it's basic education, or it's a combination of both. They registered in terms of particular legislation and so on. It's only once we have that information, Chair, that we can indeed move forward with the draft. You are correct when you speak about things like the name of the entity. That's entirely within Parliament's purview to change those things. But on one or two of the other aspects, we indeed need the input of the department, and they've indicated that they are investigating the various avenues that we discussed last week. The one major sticking point at this moment is the view of the department that this should be incorporated as a company. We don't share that view. This is not meant to be a revenue-generating entity. It's unclear why we would want to delve into that realm of the Companies Act. We saw with the SABC inquiry all the difficulties that that caused from a simple legal interpretation point of view. Where in the SABC inquiry, we had board members testify that they weren't clear as to whether the Companies Act applied or whether the Broadcasting Act applied. And we ran into many difficulties. And my question to the department was to say, please explain to us what it is in the Companies Act that you specifically want, and there's no reason why we can't incorporate it here. If it's specific fiduciary duties, for example, let's put it here. Then the other major concern that I had last week, you will recall, was on Section 5, which was the heart of the bill, which was the collaboration with the different educational institutions to set up these collabs. And that section had simply said that there will be an agreement in place between the parties. And I raised with the department that my concern was that those third-party collabs, there's no auditing of those collabs. There is nothing in law that requires them to spend the money in a particular way, or there's no fiduciary duties on the people that will be handling the money on the ground. And I thought that as a minimum, we should have in that section that an agreement must be entered into, and these are the minimum requirements of the agreement. And I was told that indeed they do have drafts of those agreements. I've asked them to please give us some of those provisions so we can build them in law, because we don't want a situation that once the money has passed hands, that there's no level of accountability at the bottom. So these are issues that I'm still quite concerned about, Chair, but as I've previously indicated, that as legal advisors, we're not the content experts. We need the department to come with those policy directives, and we can then work around it. And where there are choices between one or the other particular drafting styles, that we can certainly bring to the committee. But for now, we certainly need more information to be able to proceed with this, Chair. Thank you.
Do you need, is the other lawyer wanting to say anything? And then, Prof, there at the back, you are the source of some information that be that may be required. I think the question, some of the questions that our parliamentary legal expert is actually raising, it's a matter, some of it that may reside with you. I'm going to allow you, sir, to speak, and then the Prof, if there's anything that he'd like to say.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chair and members. So, I think we were working towards that consolidation. There was an assignment of roles between the parliamentary legal advisors and the department that on content issues. And then we had to, Chair, per the previous meeting, we thought there were 2 weeks, so it was about bringing that work together from the different teams this week and then presenting it next week, but then we're already here today, and that's why we seem a little disorganized. But with that sharing of roles, the parliamentary advisors similarly had some drafting work to do, for example, on the work of the composition of the board and coming up with how you then redraft all of that, and as well as the provision on disclosure of interest. So I'm just saying both parties in this collaboration had responsibilities. In terms of the department's role, that's what, at least as we walk out of here, this presentation will, in our view, enable the parliamentary legal advisors then, because that's the content work we had to do. And I think it addresses probably 90% of the issues, with the exception perhaps of one or two smaller issues. But it will enable then the parliamentary legal advisors, in my view, to take the work forward and just do the actual drafting as required. If there's something missing, we will then urgently address those in the today and tomorrow, I propose that. In terms of the matter of company, I think it's better left for the DDG to argue the department's position, but we see that there's a bit of a risk here that the bill, and it already arose in the previous meetings that it was pointed out, but where's this fiduciary duty? You've only used one word, fiduciary duty. Now, then we were scratching and looking for, oh yes, at least there's something in the Public Finance Act, but it's at a certain context there, for example, on financial issues. So clearly it might be that there's a proper clause of fiduciary duties missing in this current bill as we speak. So one of the honourable members said you must look for other provisions that, from a governance perspective, that are missing, and it must also be inserted. So that becomes a quite a challenging task for someone to then go find what are now all these governance things out there, including in the Companies Act, and to try to borrow from that act and cut and paste into this bill. So it's possible, but that's the kind of dilemma we're wrestling with. Now, if you lift that to a higher level, it's actually about whether this is a company or not. Because the moment we do form a company, now bear in mind that the MISA, which is the primary entity moving towards this new entity, is already a company. Now, if you then look at the new company, you say, what best legal form should it take? we still hold the view that it be a, that it be a company chair, because there was some consultation with Treasury and their SSC governance units there on what are the different options and best models. And from all the advice we've gathered, it seems that the company route is appropriate. More so because the moment you registered as a company, a certain part of the Companies Act applied to the entity. And those are real governance provisions. It reflects the latest updated governance provisions linked to King reports. We're told that even as the King report will again be updated shortly, that feeds very quickly into the Companies Act, and again, you have updated governance provisions applying to the entity. Whereas there's a risk if you try to copy and paste governance things from other laws in here, and we, this law is not updated regularly, that we our governance provisions become archaic. So that's the risk in all of this. But even in our presentation, we would have said this is option one and two. Companies Act with the benefits, just a plain juristic person and the risks involved in that. So, Chair, that's just in a nutshell, we still propose the Companies Act route, in which event some redrafting in that respect is also required, because the bill doesn't currently provide for the establishment of INEC as a company as such, so we just have to build in then, if the committee agrees to that approach, build in some provisions for its establishment. On the matter of Section 5 and the collabs, for example, our recommendation to then the parliamentary legal advisers are contained on slide 15, though it's not before the committee. But in any event, so we try to there reformulate the whole thing to make it clear that it's in fact the post-school education and training institution that does the establishing part of the collab. But before that can happen, there must be consultation between INESI and the relevant post-school education and training institution, and they agree on possible terms and conditions for that collaboration. But then it's that particular post-school education or training institution that does the actual establishment. So that was the first leg of it, which we've proposed some other drafting to hope to fix that. The second leg of that was, but how is it? What's this agreement between the parties? And there should be, and we agreed with the parliamentary legal advisor that yes, let's put at least some minimum requirements, at least to comply with the PFMA year, for this agreement between INESI and a collab. And that's what 5.2 then tries to do by clearly stating that, well, we are going to propose that it clearly states that INESI must enter into a written agreement with the post-school education and training institution, which agreement must include a requirement that funds will only be transferred to a collab if the institution establishing the collab implements effective, efficient, and transparent financial management and internal control systems. So that's typically what a provision well, it's there in any event in the PFMA and would apply in any event, but it's typically a transfer agreement provision that would do no harm in repeating it in the bill. I'll stop there, Chair, except to say yes, we believe that 90% of the policy issues are addressed now and can enable the parliamentary advisers, and of course we're still here to support as required to put that into a bill format. Chair, thank you.
Any views from the state law?
Chair, we have nothing to add, but we will be participating with the necessary amendments to the bill. So we will be assisting the department and also consulting with the parliamentary law advisor with regards to the amendments. So we have nothing further to add.
The learned professor.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, thank you for the opportunity. I won't take much of your time. I just want to add that I think the issues that were identified during the previous meeting last week, those are indeed issues about which clarity should be gained. On many of these issues, in practice, a certain pattern has developed where, and I will try to bring that information to the attention of everybody involved at the moment in the discussion, but I think these are key issues that we have to resolve. I think there has been a pattern of activity that will feed into these discussions. We haven't been working in a void. We've been working under very strict regulations and responsibilities of the board on these matters. It just has to be to fit into a proper legal framework now. Thank you very much, Chair.
Colleagues, any comment? None. Are we fine, Baba McKenzie? Mama Longeni, Mama Tsotesi, are you all fine? Thank you. Sorry, ma'am.
I see when raising this concern, it looks very easy that it will be something to be done very quickly, but from the explanation, it raises the challenge.
Thank you, thank you. Baba, just one, I know that I don't want to delve into the issue. Just for interest, the three-year term, is it reasonable? Just, yes. Is it reasonable?
I guess a debate can be had here and making arguments on both sides. But
Madam board member, can you 3 year term? Is it? I know that I've ambushed you, but is a 3 year term reasonable? Yes. Press your mic.
I think it would be reasonable, assuming that, you know, the plans are acted out the way they're expected, and sometimes you find delays, so that's the challenge.
I, Baba CEO, you wanted to, yeah? You have a right. You are sitting here. So
Chair, I was just talking amongst myself.
Yes, let us hear you.
Generally, Chair, I think some of the terms are shorter than they should be, because to carry out the mandate, you need sufficient time. But I don't know, if the plan is executable and judgeable within 3 years, that's the appropriate term. The term should match the execution timetable of the plan. Thank you, Chair.
No, okay, we are going to step off this matter. It's okay. I am asking this question because I don't know how long it takes for a person, perhaps I'm a slow learner. I don't know how long it really takes for a person who only sits once in a quarter to grapple with matters of the entity and give it a direction. Why is it so easy for board members to navigate a territory and it takes ministers 5 years? So these politicians are very slow learners, and they, with their mandate, it takes them extra 2 years to get to grips to, well, except the Americans who do it 1 year less. But what has become interesting is the Chinese have now stretched it even further. Mr. McKenzie is going to join them. He says he's going to do it for life. But it's okay. I don't quite, for me, it really doesn't make enough sense that in your very first year, you are invited into this space. 3 years you've gone. I don't think so, but anyway, it's fine. But think about it. Prof, you wanted to come in.
Chair, I also think the three-year term depends on the nature of the organization. There are certain organizations when people can step in and you understand most of the issues at play. In the case of digital skills, it's a very fast-moving area, a fast-moving space out there. And it does take some time, indeed, for board members who are not familiar with the topic. I happen to be familiar with the topic. It was my subject in which I was working for many years. But for board members, I've seen that it does take some time to get familiar with the topic and then to pick up to the speed of what is happening in this case. So the appropriateness of the time for the nature of the organization, as mentioned by the Mr. Barnes, is, I think, important.
Think about it. We are stepping off, unless if Shalembe, you wanted to have a closing remarks on the matter.
On this one of the board term,
not on that one. On the subject.
On the whole thing. Okay.
On the subject.
Yeah, on the whole bill, then I think we can, as our legal advisor was saying, we can safely undertake to bring a redrafted bill along the lines of issues that have been raised by next week chair if the committee is sitting, as we had been originally given 14 days. So we will do that.
We will definitely sit every Tuesday. So for those who needs to go and do their work somewhere, make sure that the process takes shape and we can have something to chew on come next week. I may decide to intervene during the week to really come closer to the situation. Make sure that everybody does play ball. And if it needs an intervention, including bringing the minister closer, I will do exactly that. But let's leave it the matter at where it is now. And everyone who's involved with NSC is free to take a walk out and go and do the work. We'll remain with the post office. Madam Board Member, you are leading the delegation.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members of Parliament and colleagues. My name is Nomahlubisi Mamane. I'm the Deputy Chair. The Chair's apology has already been acknowledged by the Chairman. Today, we've got Mark Barnes, the Group CEO, Lindiwe Kwele, the Group COO, as well as Jabu Dlamuka, who is the acting CFO, and our company secretary, Dawood. I'm going to hand over to Mark, then he can take us through the agenda items that are going to be discussed today, and I will just support as and when necessary. Thanks, Chair.
You may still see outside, please do justice before you depart. Mr. Barnes.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, and Deputy Chair. This meet, we're grateful, to be honest, for the opportunity of coming here to discuss the realities that are happening within our group and that are sometimes misrepresented in the media. And so I'm going to speak on specific topics. We've designed the organisation, the presentation to be in line exactly with the questions that were asked by the committee. And I'll start off by handing over an update to the project leader on the SASA project, the COO, Lindiwe Kwele, and we will then just... Kwele. I knew that. I just like to practice that thing because you need it more often than not. COO, up to you.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to honourable members. Um, The presentation that I'm presenting today is a presentation that we shared with the IMC chairperson last week, and we'll focus basically on the progress thus far on the card swap as well as the system performance issues, because we all appreciate on what happened in July. Just to give the committee some assurance in terms of the mitigation plans that we've put in place, and I will then give a status update on the August pay plan and our plan moving forward, and then the overall state of readiness. Thank you. Yeah, in July, the first 2 days, we had the system glitches, and beneficiaries were up in arms around the payment. There was an issue around the SLA transaction in terms of the industry norms, because we only had the network strength was not as great, and it was unable to actually manage huge volumes. Then we had to put out some plans, which I will elaborate further in terms of what did we do to actually close that gap. Thank you. Chairperson, I just thought that I needed to give this perspective to the committee, considering that there is a Concord ruling in relation to the lifting of the invalidity of the CPS contract, and I will actually limit my discussion around this cash payment beneficiaries, because that is the critical issue, just to give the committee an insight in terms of where we are and what's been happening over the few months in preparation for the complete phasing out ECPS. If you look at the biometric payments of the beneficiaries, which is a critical issue that is linked to the Concord ruling, chairperson, looking at the April pay run, we were looking at 3.1 million beneficiaries that were cash beneficiaries who were paid through the CPS process. And our mandate from the IMC is to ensure that we completely phase them out by the end of September, which is in line with the Concord ruling. Chairperson, as of August, the number was sitting at 1098, and then I will also be giving the committee a status update in terms of where we are. In relation to the ACB direct banks, direct transfer, as you know that as of the June, July, and August pay run, the SASA is no longer paying directly to the Grindrod SASA account in terms of issuing the payment file, but instead they are paying directly to the beneficiaries, but who are still holding the SASA Grindrod card. So in essence, for the August month, they paid 10.8 million, in which 2.5 of that was done through the SASA SAPO account. In relation to our statistics for the card swap, as of the 23rd of August, chairperson, we were sitting at 5.1, but as of yesterday, the close of business, we are already at 5.5 million in terms of the number of cards that have been issued by SAPO, the new SASA card, chairperson. Just to zoom in into the glitches that took place in the July payment, as I've indicated, there were operational glitches in relation to the network as well as the data center and the connectivity and the application. So what we did as SAPO, we actually worked very closely with Telkom as well as CITA, including the bank service PASA, as well as PASA, who were instrumental in actually working with us when we were doing simulation. Chairperson, in July, we were only paying 700,000 beneficiaries. Those are the beneficiaries that were affected for the first 2 days of the month. As you know, that the payment takes place between the first of the month until the 20th of the month. So the first day, beneficiaries could not actually access their money through the merchants. Those are your retail, your checkers, Pick and Pay and the likes. And then in the ATMs, the money was reflecting, but they were unable to withdraw. Then it became clear that there were system glitches in terms of our ability to do transaction per second, because in terms of the industry norms, CPS is standing at 90 transaction per second, and our system was only doing between 30 and 60, which then created a clogging in the system, and then there were returned transaction. That created a huge panic on the beneficiaries, but that issue was resolved within 72 hours. Subsequently, Chairperson, we then came together with the team to go back to the drawing board to make sure that we put adequate mitigating plans to deal with that issue on the on our integrated grant payment system. So we upgraded the IGPF system into the Telkom Enterprise hosted environment, and then the current IGPS system that is hosted within SAPO data center will also stay as an interim backup or a failover system. So we also were able to actually better serve host capacity as well as high availability on the server, which really resulted in improved capacity. Where we are sitting today's chair, as I've indicated in June, we're looking at between 30 to 60 TPS, which is transaction per second in terms of the industry standard, and we were not meeting that. But as I'm sitting today, we are way above the industry threshold because we are sitting at 200 TPS, which is something that we are excited about, and we were able to test that because for the August pay run, we're actually paying 2.5 million beneficiaries, and we never had glitches in that regard. And then the connectivity with BankServe, because ultimately the payment file, BankServe is our critical partner to enable the payment through various channels. And that was also done because we actually replaced the copper diginet lines with high volume speed fiber, which is dedicated links, which actually scale on demand. As I've indicated, the industry SLA is 90, but we are able to do it on demand during peak time at 200 TPS, Chairperson. So this issue, it actually addresses issues of slow response as well as the throughput. So what we also did was to actually split the card issuing problem. Another contributing factor in July, at that time we were operating from the same link. And then we realized that when we have to do card swap at the same time, we have to do transaction processing, which creating a clocking in the system. So what we did, we were able to split the card issuing function plus the transaction processing function so that they can run concurrently on our IGPS system, which has actually yielded positive results. So that is why our numbers in terms of the card swap figures that have presented, we are now able to do 167,000 per day in terms of card swap. So that has given us, it has allowed for a better load balancing between the two processes, Chair. So in terms of all the interventions, as you can see, we are all green in terms of the IT stabilizing interventions that we put in place, and it was tested during the August month. Chairperson, as I've indicated, for the August payment, CPS paid almost 1 million beneficiaries at pay points, except those that have been decommissioned, because one of the critical issues to ensure that once we actually migrated the beneficiaries, we have to decommission those pay points. So at the moment, only 1 million were paid for the August month, and then 7.2 received their payment using their own bank account, in which 3 million of those are still SASSA Green Road beneficiaries. And then SAPO Post Bank, we paid 2.5 million people. But parallel to that, Chair, we also started piloting 18 sites to really replicate the CPS method, because we need to start taking over the cash payment. So we were able to do that for 4,201 beneficiaries, and that also happened successfully, Chairperson. In terms of the August payment, Chairperson, as of last week, we were sitting at 94% in terms of the total money that was received. As you know, that not all beneficiaries withdraw their money during any payment cycle. Others, because others die, and others they don't actually withdraw their money. But in terms of any transaction that took place across all channels, including your point of sales in the merchants, as well as your ATMs and the over-the-counter within SAPO, all of those transactions were successfully done, 100% successfully done, in line with over and above the industry norms, which are 99%. So we were able to ensure to successfully manage all the transactions. But in terms of the total amount of money that was withdrawn, we had 3.2 billion. We've paid almost 3.1 billion, Chairperson. And then we've also put in our war room, which is where we monitor payment and troubleshooting. We have multi-channel platforms where there's feedback loop, including the working very closely with the network,
and as well as BASA to ensure that there's vertical and horizontal integration in all our efforts, and it's yielding positive results. Chairperson, I think I've covered this issue. The critical issue that affected beneficiaries in the August pay run was the issues of the PIN reset, where old people are actually forgetting, because we've migrated now with the cash beneficiaries, because Okoko used to get their money through the biometrics at pay points. But now with the migration, because we are trying to encourage people to migrate into an electronic payment system, because the cash payment is expensive, it's risky. I think we've all witnessed all the increase in terms of the cash heist that we are witnessing across the country. It's actually posing a huge risk. And even in some of the post offices, we've had some armed robberies happening. So, Chairperson, over the counter, the beneficiaries will be able to be assisted through the biometric process. And most of them during the month, some of the glitches and the high customer care complaints were around the PIN reset. So it's something that we are addressing in order to ensure that the elderly are not inconvenienced because they forget their PINs. As well as the deductions, this issue was a big issue in the public domain in terms of the media, where beneficiaries were complaining about their deductions. And I wanted to assure the committee that the new SASSA support card does not allow for any deductions. But then it became clear at the IMC last week, the SASSA team indicated that CPS has admitted that their system they are responsible for these deductions, and they will be refunding the beneficiaries. Obviously, that has got nothing to do with SAPO, but we just wanted to reiterate, because we most of our political principals, we wanted us to actually explain these deductions that the beneficiaries were complaining about. But CPS has acknowledged that, and they will be dealing with that between the SAPO and SASSA and the CPS. We are also dealing with the fact that we were, during the July, August, as well as September, Chair, we will be rolling out our infrastructure. It is common cause that SAPO in the past has not invested in its own infrastructure. We have old computers, we don't have biometric devices with keypads and stuff. We've put in almost 300 million to roll out that infrastructure in the branches. So some branches have not been able to actually offer the cash swap functionalities, but henceforth we will be able to do that. So the matter is being addressed effectively, Chair. I think I've covered this. Chairperson, for the month of our preparation for the month of September, as I've indicated, due to our rigorous CATSA process that we've seen, initially, Chair, when the SASSA team told us that the only way to meet the Concord judgment was to go to the pay point, we put in computers, we appointed a number of warm bodies to actually assist with the intensification of the CATSA. But when we crossed the 2.5 mark and celebrated that, it became very clear that some of the cash beneficiaries have not been swapped. It's actually the electronic payment beneficiaries. So we've been trying to chase the beneficiaries. So from the 3.1 that were paid in April to as of the 20th of August, we are sitting at almost 559. But based on the numbers and the statistics and the ID numbers that we've been sharing with the SASSA team, they've indicated that for the month of September, CPS will only be paying 304,642 cash beneficiaries. And as I've indicated, based on our the system stabilization, we are now able to migrate to swap 167,000 people per day. So that number should not be a problem in our ability to meet the Concord judgment, Chair. So if, worst case scenario, if it becomes clear that come the 15th of September, not all cash beneficiaries have been migrated, the SAPO team, we've put together a mechanism where we can auto-migrate beneficiaries in preparation for the October month. So we'll auto-migrate, we'll SMS notify them, and then we'll ensure that their money is actually transferred into a new card, and then they can come to a post office to get their money and the new card, Chairperson. In terms of our risk, as I've covered the first risk in terms of our auto-migration for the September month. One of the key issues also is the issue of the cash in transit. As you know, that the biggest cash in transit company, which still has links with the SASSA, which is your Fidelity, they are still contractually linked to the CPS tender for the September month, because in October we did the 18th site, but now for the September month there are three provinces where we're going to do 100% payment as well as 60% across the entire country. Obviously, I won't dwell much in terms of our tactical plan on the cash payment because it has security and those factors. The issue of labor dispute and strikes, as you know, SAPO had a strike in June, July, May, June month, and to a certain degree, some of our branches were affected, Chair, and currently SASA's team is on a go slow. There are issues around their refusal to actually do biometric enablement, which then impact on our ability to do the onboarding. But that issue is being dealt with adequately, Chair. The issue of PINs, I think I've covered the PIN issue. And then on the issues of security, the NetJoint and JCPS cluster is also assisting us in that regard. I will hand over to the CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I don't know if the committee would like to finish all of the matters and then come back. We'll deal with SASA first.
Remove SASA from the table, or would like to get the whole presentation? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Let me talk about this much speculated about internal transfer of funds. Let me first set the scene for you from a legal perspective. The Postbank subsidiary, Postbank SOC Limited, was incorporated entirely as a wholly owned subsidiary of SAPO in compliance and anticipation of the granting of a fully fledged banking license. It needed to be a separate company in order to complete the Section 16 application of the license. As things stand now, Postbank is still a division of SAPO, and that business, its assets and liabilities, once they have been agreed, will be transferred to Postbank in due course and in compliance with the various dictates that will determine the exact transfer of assets and liabilities. And those in particular would be the capital adequacy ratio prescribed by the Reserve Bank. As the Postbank gets its banking license, it becomes regulated also by the South African Reserve Bank, and it has a capital adequacy ratio. The typical capital adequacy ratio for banks in South Africa is around, you know, in the early teens. We've been imposed double that, and that would need to be complied with. There was an MOU way back in 2005 between the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services in relation to a capital injection at that time of $750 million, which money was required to be put on deposit with the central bank, and that money will obviously has never and will never be accessed for any other purpose. And then over the years, certain intercompany obligations have developed between the division, now Postbank, and the group holding company, which involved various services to and fro. And this is not the first time we've had any intercompany transfers over the years between these two organizations, supported by valid contracts. And once we finally agree in a properly transparent process between the two boards, the amount that will be transferred, all of those would be settled. For example, the Postbank division enjoys the tax shield of the group company. If it were an independent company, there would be different economics that result to it. So that will be a properly considered process by both boards and overseen by DTPS and National Treasury, no doubt. So the funds that were sitting in a SAPO group account designated for in the Postbank division for the time being that were transferred to settle certain critical SAPO obligations which we needed to meet in terms of our SAPO mandate, a SASA mandate, in terms of our contractual obligations to suppliers and employees, were critical obligations that were enjoyed the full scrutiny and thorough investigation and consideration by the SAPO board. Perhaps the deputy chair would comment to that afterwards, and in no way would jeopardize the license application of the Postbank. Nonetheless, the principal terms of these transfers have now been signed between the chairs of the two boards, just to sort of double belts and braces this matter. And it's an internal matter that has, you know, been put to bed internally. There is no
impropriety, there's no law that's been breached, there's no PFMA provision that's been breached, and this was mischievous internal speculation which the media took hold of for reasons of their own or that they might have. So let me give the committee the utmost assurance that we consider these things and take them very seriously, and it's not even within our DNA to consider things that are not in line or properly legislated. And really, I think that's all it is. Thank you, Chair. I don't know, perhaps the Deputy Chair can comment later if that's required. From the Board's perspective, every action here was fully approved by the Sophomore Board and fully disclosed. Then if we go on to one of the tougher tasks we have to deal with, I'll hand back to the COO, who is responsible for operations. We had an enormous build-up of mail over the months of June and July when the strike was on, and preceding that there were a couple of weeks of go slow. And to be honest, the volumes coming in as a result of internet-based orders are climbing almost exponentially. They're sort of four times what they were last year. And so we have huge, we currently process about over 1 million items a day, new items, but the backlog had increased quite significantly over a month. So if I can hand over the COO to give you a snapshot of where we are now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, CEO. As CEO has indicated, just before the strike, we also had a problem of a go slow at both Tshwane and May and Westpost, where really we have our biggest volumes as well. And that was exacerbated by the complaints from the staff around the OSHA compliance in relation to our ability as an employer to create a conducive environment. As I've indicated earlier on, we have not really invested. There hasn't been any recapitalization in terms of ensuring that there's the air conditioners and the heater, considering that the June, July, May, June month and July were the coldest month in Joburg, and employees didn't want to work over for the overtime, the night shift, because of the unconducive working environment. So they embarked on a go slow, and as a company, because we also had to deal with our liquidity issue to really resolve those issues, we also had an issue at the Tshwane Mail, same problem. So we came together with labor to find a mechanism around how we resolve those particular issues. Chairperson, as you know, in terms of our KPIs on the in line with the ICASA delivery standards, we have to deliver at 92%. But between last year and as of last first quarter of the month of the year, we were sitting at 87.5 in terms of our delivery standard, notwithstanding the impact that the strike has had in terms of our the volumes and the backlog that we're sitting on. I know that the members, they received a report that talks about 53.2 instead of 47.2, and the following areas are mainly affected by the backlog. That we're seeing a lot of carryovers in the VETS region, considering that there was that issue just before the strike also in the VETS region as well as in the northern region, where they are sitting at about 8.2 million. As I've indicated, VETS is the highest affected region, and we've put in some mechanisms in place to actually deal with that particular issue, including re-looking at our shift framework so that we can be able to actually clear the backlog, as well as the JIMC. Our carryover is sitting at 9 million in that particular region. But as CEO has indicated, our current inflows, usually we get almost a million or million and a half daily, but now we are seeing 2.6 million per day and more. And the team is actually working together even on weekends to actually try and deal with that particular issue on the carryovers. But more importantly, the issues of a shift framework and a deployment framework, which is something that the labor partners were having an issue with, but it has since been resolved, and that is why we are giving ourselves an indication that come the end of September, the backlog will be cleared. And the issues that were contributing to this, Chairperson, as I've indicated, there was an issue around the forklift where the vehicles were removed by our fleet partners because of our inability to pay, as well as the forklift, the pallet, all these other issues that are dependency issues for us to be able to expedite this, which also impacted on our backlog. But more importantly, we've also repositioned and re-engineered our processes, because some of the previous processes where everything is sent through to the JMC and then we end up duplicating business processes. But now the discussions with ISAS, which they've agreed, is that we have to look at international parcels that are meant for Cape Town International and Durban International to go direct, as opposed to doing the same process via, because there were inefficiencies in some of our business processes. So we've cleared that and we are beginning to see a result. And as I've indicated, even the shift framework as well as the extended hours, if as and when required, are beginning to see to give us some positive yield in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. If I can ask the Acting CFO just to give some of the highlights of our audit and our results. The AGM hasn't happened yet, so these are subject to the AGM, but all the processes have been complete. So I'll just ask Thabo to give some highlights. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll just give a synopsis of our financial performance as at the end, 31st of March 2018. Part of our strategy, the financial turnaround actually, is to look to the investment in both infrastructure and the human capital together with the improvement of the customer service. Our aim is to ensure that we reduce the cost of doing businesses and we increase the value for money to the customers coming to our branches and our centers so that we can reclaim the lost market over the past years. You will therefore see that over the years we've seen the trend of decrease in revenues. Well, it has been decreasing over an average of about 4%, but last year we actually managed to reduce that decrease to about 3% on year to year. We further, as I said, embark on the cost reduction and improve efficiencies throughout the group. You'll see that our expenditure reduced by 7% on year to year, which we actually quite appreciate. Most of that is attributable to the staff cost containment, which make about 65% of our cost of doing business. Our loss for the year, therefore, decreased again by further 8% because of the above increase in revenue and reduction in expenditure. We further want to stimulate our balance sheet so that we can actually enter the capital market and to ensure that our balance sheet is bankable at all times. This will allow us to actually roll out our infrastructure program over the next 3 years. Our net asset value, therefore, has increased over the past 2 years to about 3.5 billion. Largely because of the settlement of the loan, which we had of about 3.7 billion, which was actually settled from the Treasury Recapitalization Funding. The next slide is, we also for the year anticipate that we're getting an unqualified audit report. This is thing which has been outstanding for SAPCO for the number of years. And we actually took it strategically that in order for our voice to be heard, when we talk to everyone, we need to change this. And we put a lot of effort, and this year we actually anticipate that we're getting an unqualified audit report, which is a great achievement to us as well. Sustainability of the group and the future funding. Chairperson and honorable member, we really focus on upgrading of our infrastructure. We know that that will yield our result in terms of the customer service and the customer experience in the SAPO group. We want to reclaim the lost market over the past years. While we're doing that, we also appreciate that we need to diversify the revenue. So my appeal and the executive appeal has put to say that the funding that we're looking for over the medium term is looking to really embark on the infrastructure upgrade program. We really want to bring the best post office where our customer can be proud of. This is also being held by a number of initiatives like SASA, which has gone a long way in terms of upgrading of our own infrastructure. We have therefore submitted funding to the National Treasury and our shareholders in terms of the interim budget adjustment. We're looking purely to invest this money in our revenue-driving initiative and infrastructure-based program. We also have submitted our MTF, which is currently under consideration with the support of our shareholder by the National Treasury. We should be getting a result for the interim budget adjustment by the end of October, and we're expecting by February we'll know about the MTF position.
we're not asking National Treasury to fund our working capital, and we need to emphasize this, and I've been emphasizing to everyone. We need infrastructure funding, especially infrastructure funding together with maybe our restructuring costs, because we appreciate that we might be, there are lots of inefficiencies within the group. And if we can get this right, we can reduce the cost of doing the business at the same time, achieving the optimal service to our customer. We therefore have got the capital initiative, which are sitting in our strategy. We want to execute that to the teeth over the next 3 years, and we're going to ring-fence the funding straightly to execute this particular funding. And I've said to everyone that that money will not be withdrawn unless it's actually directed to fund those capital interests, because we are serious about the post office turning around. We also appreciate that even though we can put some funding on the infrastructure, there is an element which is always, can never be profitable in the SAPO business, and that is a public service mandate, which is in a number of cases is called a social mandate. We've made a submission to the National Treasury and our shareholder to look at funding this particular mandate. This is a critical enabler in our turnaround strategy, because you can't yield return to this particular social mandate. They are not commercially viable. But as a business, we understand that we are in the public space. We both need to meet our social mandate and our commercial mandate. And this is one of the social mandates that we want to maintain and achieve, but we need support in terms of funding from the National Treasury. A concrete business case with analysis and all the methodology of determining the value has been submitted for consideration and is with the National Treasury now. On the human capital issue, which is our labor, the CEO has actually highlighted that we have some stuck, hence the backlog in our processing of our mail. We actually reached that settlement around July. It was exactly on the 28th of July 2018, which we applied as well, because we saw that the adjustment to our labor cost to compensate our employees, because they haven't been getting an increase for the past 3 years or so. So it was a good gesture. It's part of our turnaround strategy as well. We need our employee to see that we value them quite substantially. Hence, we actually, notwithstanding the liquidity challenge, we actually said that this is due and that has to be done as part of the turnaround strategy. We increased, therefore, our labor cost by 6.5% across the board in the entire SAPO group, effective from the 1st of April this year. We're also embarking on our Section 189 process, which is basically restructuring. We're sitting with the human capital cost of about, it's a 3.4 billion, which contributes about 65% of our total cost. And we're saying this is non-sustainable. With the labor with the employees around about 18,000. So we're saying this is not in a long time. We can't run in the same business model. So we need that one, Section 189, to be rolled out throughout the group. And it's a critical one, Jefferson, because if we get this particular round one and the honorable member, we will be sure to contain our cost of doing business quite substantially. And in the next 3 years, we therefore expect to turn the group to profitability. And then thank you very much, Chair and honorable member.
Thank you, Javu. The last question that was posed to ask us to address was this press articles relating to the award of the network upgrade. Ironically, we've become a focal point for the press, ironically because of the high profile we're enjoying in relation to SASA and because of the perceived extraordinary cash flows that are going through the system now. Everyone wants a piece of us. Everyone wants to participate in those cash flows. But let me tell you the facts. The fact is that the tender for the network upgrade opened in 22 March. I'd been there a month or so, a couple of months, 2016, and it closed again on the 20th of May. And the tender was cancelled for two primary reasons by the board, which is entirely within the authority to exercise their judgment. The first one was that the financial viability of the future business case was not such that we could entertain an enormous network upgrade. There weren't increased revenue cases obvious to us why we should in fact upgrade our systems, because there was nothing new that was going to happen to justify that kind of expense, first point. Second point, there was a break clause in our existing network partners
which would have resulted in a cost of about $193 million for an early termination of that contract if we were to award it to someone else, which would have been classified as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Those two factors made it obvious to the board that we should then withdraw the tender, and so the matter rested until it became clear that we were going to get the SASA mandate. Once the SASA mandate came onto the table, the case presented itself at last for a justifiable reinvestment in our network. And it's on that basis, and in the light of that contract and the forward cash flows that it presented to the group, the investment by ourselves and by the state became justifiable because of the business case of SASA. And against that present mandate, we approached National Treasury and got their permission to engage with Telkom, which was approved. And that, honourable members and chair, is how the matter rests. Thank you. Chair, that, unless the deputy chair wishes to make any comments, that's from the executive point of view, our answer to the questions you called us to address. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the team has answered the questions that were posed adequately. My input would be to just confirm on the issue of the transfer of funds that we did deliberate on it, and we did give the executives the permission to take it forward. I do understand that there are delegations of authority, and obviously letters were written to the department to make sure that we do what is necessary. And also to just say that as a member of the board since August 2015, we are seeing a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of where the business could get to. Critical, as Jabu has said, is the issue of investment. Without investment, because the investment has been forsaken for a very long time, we're not going to be able to deliver what needs to be delivered. We can see the opportunities in terms of where we can generate new business away from mail, and that can only be activated when we've been able to invest in our infrastructure. So that's just another request that I'd like to put forward. Thank you, Chair.
Chavo is my name, so when you mention that name, it hits me very hard. So you can call him CFO. Shalem. Are you fine? Okay. Colleagues? Nomzan, Madam, follow. And the members shall follow. We will go this way, anti-clockwise.
No longer chairperson. Thanks. Good to see Sopo here again. Just board member, ma'am, I think that light at the end of the tunnel isn't a train. Be careful of that. Just in terms of the, I think it's the $200 million transfer between Postbank and the South African Post Office, that clearly made a bit of a splash in the media. And let me just give you the perception I have. It's that the minister was alarmed by this and called an urgent meeting with Mr. Mark Barnes to find out why you irregularly took money from the Post Bank and transferred it to the Post Office to meet operational responsibilities in terms of creditors. So that's the perception I'm left with from the media. I presume, and you were called to the headmaster's office on Monday, and I presume that after that some sort of statement was issued to clarify this. Because I haven't, I've briefly scanned this morning's papers, but I haven't seen anything in the paper. So I think it's important to come out strongly and correct that miscommunication, because it's impacting your reputation personally, Mr. Barnes, as well as the reputation of the Post Office and the Post Bank. So just to comment on that. I see we kicked off with the SASA grants. I remember various committees and various parliamentarians saying that if even one person didn't get their grant, the implications of that were enormous for that person. And clearly several people didn't get their grants on time. I presume that's not going to happen again. I mean, I had an instance where someone mailed me and said, she had no idea where to go. Then she went to Midrand and they sent her away and they told her to come back the following month. And this was for an old age pension. So, you know, these issues have been recurring. Are we well on the road down, or well down that road where people are not going to have that any sort of issue again where they're going to be able to withdraw their grants with no problem. I think we want that assurance. Then just to turn to mail, which is my particular area of concern. And I've always said this, the post office, if you're not serious about your mail business, then give it to someone else who can do it. You know, if your focus is on Postbank, if your focus is on SASSA grants, then by all means focus on that. But don't penalize the people who are reliant on your service. And I'm literally getting dozens of mails a day from people about parcels, about items, and some of them are sadly funny. I had one mail come in where a man, he did a whole chart, because you know, people are quite concerned about this, he did a whole chart of the time taken for mail at the turn of the 20th century, so I'm talking about the 1900s, the time taken for mail to reach England and the time for mail to reach from England to reach here. And he compared those times against the times, and I can send it to you, Mr. Barnes, he compared those times against the times it took mail to get him now, which he's not receiving. And the times were better 120 years ago than they are now, for all the reasons. And you can have strikes, and you can have delays, and you can have system failures, but tell that to your customers. And then when I hear your CFO saying, are we going to get that business back? No, you're not. Because the minute you start dropping your customers, they're going somewhere else, and they're finding alternative methods, and they're doing it all the time. I must commend your Mr. Mark Anthony Janssen van Rensburg and Simon Labello, who are always very, very helpful when it comes to issues that I pass on to them. So I just want to say thank you to those two gentlemen for always stepping up to the plate. Your SMS, your helplines and your email systems that are meant to address customer complaints, unresponsive. So, you know, people send emails, they don't get a response. People send SMSs, they don't get a response. People call the helpline, it's not answered. That's a problem. That's something that you need to address. And that's why I say, when I say I don't think you're serious about mail, I'm talking about all these things. You know, if there's a strike, at least somebody's there to pick up a phone and say, sorry, there's a strike. The initial communication that came out from the post office said that the backlog would be cleared end of August. That was the first thing I saw, 3 weeks to clear the backlog. So I actually gave it another week. And I, you know, when people ask me, I say, well, give them some time. You know, they have to clear the backlog. It'll be end of August. Now it comes out end of September. Are you guaranteeing the South African public and the post office customers that there will be no backlog in the system at the end of September? Is that a positive guarantee that you can give to your customers? Then the post bank. Clearly the Banks Act wasn't changed in time for the June deadline. Can you just clarify that you have to start that process again, the corporatization of the post bank? What steps then need to be taken to move along that? Because I was always under the impression that if you didn't meet that deadline, the entire application would fall away. If you can just confirm that. Then the growth in internet orders, this isn't a surprise. It's not headline news. You know this was coming. In every performance plan that you've tabled before this committee, you've known that your internet orders grown by 400% from China. You've said that we want to act as the e-commerce hub for the region. You've accepted that this is a huge growth area for your organization. And yet you still come here and you present it as an excuse. This is why you can't deliver, because this mail volume has grown. I put a written question in about the conveyor at JIMC. And I was given an answer that by the end of March this year, that conveyor would be up and running, because the investment would be made and that system would be automated. I would imagine when it comes to clearing backlogs, machines don't care if you have air conditioners or heaters. They just do the job. That you would have that automation in place. And in response to the written question, you know, it's an offence to lie to Parliament. If you say you're going to get the thing done by March, you should have it done by March. So if it's up and running, I'll withdraw my question. Then the parcels diverting to Cape Town and Durban. This is something that we've seen in your annual performance plans regularly. Every time you present it, you said, yes, you want to make those two areas hubs, so the parcels are shipped directly there because it will ease the backlog. Why are we still talking about this? You know, I think it's a reasonable question to ask when you've had this going. You've set this out as an objective, and you still haven't reached it. And then you come here and you tell us, no, this is what we're going to do to fix it. We know, because you've told us this before. Why hasn't it been done? Then just lastly, and I'll leave it for now. Perhaps you'll give me a second round if I need it, Chairperson. Just congratulations to you, Mr. Barnes, and the team on the, I know it's unconfirmed, but the unqualified audit. I think that's really great work, and you can all take a bow for that. Thanks, Chair. If I need a second round, I'll put up my fingers. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at your sustainability, for your future, for the future of the post office. We've had presentations before on alternative or innovations to actually generate revenue for the post office. We're talking about the property bonds, for example. We're talking about public-private partnerships. What has happened with those? I mean, have those had board approval? Is the department seriously considering it? Because, you're not going to survive on your mail revenue. We all know that. The business model on which you're operating is just not sustainable. So what sort of radical changes are going to happen, or are they just sort of hoping that something miraculous will happen? Then the public service mandate, this is something that I've been talking about for years. Is there positive feedback that will be met by the Treasury? And what is the cost of that now? I know you did tell us before, but I just can't remember. If we can have some idea of what that is. And whether your request for infrastructure upgrades is seriously being considered by the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question, can you please tell us, have you got a plan to deal with a long queues? Because it's a big problem about the queues, especially in rural areas. Secondly, on your post office, you've got only one staff. I'm talking about Libode. Libode is my constituency. Sometimes we have to intervene because there's no food, there's no water, there's no toilet, there's no what. But our people are chewing outside and the weather is not fine for them. Can you please tell us, do you have a plan for that? Okay, Honorable Mackenzie, talking about the infrastructure, what has been covered to me. Secondly, your service providers, and I didn't hear you talking about your service providers. I'm not quite sure. If I missed that, I'm sorry. Have you paid your service providers, especially those you rent a space, especially in Mpumalanga, whereby you don't have your own building for post office, you rent a space, because there's a big cry about their payment. You give them a sum, but you didn't tell them when are you going to settle the amount. The last one, can you please try to make the communication about this SASSA thing? Because old people didn't understand and they didn't know. Can you please try go to radios anywhere? Because maybe in town, they know. But in rural areas, it's out. It's a play. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, Chairperson, regarding the challenges that have been alluded to, even in the presentation here, we have received, telephones and SMSs, people complain about not getting their money. But from what is written here, it really gives us hope, and we just hope for the sustainability of the improvement. And on the late arrival of cash, I wish one could get more details. Is it the lateness in terms of a few hours whereby people will still get their money on the same day, or lateness of, to an extent of people going home and having to come the next day? and the same late arrival of cash, what is the implication in terms of safety? All deductions of money from the grant. I've been looking here in mitigation as to what's going to be done to make sure that this practice doesn't continue. And we also have a challenge of loans, whereby beneficiaries have been given loans and social workers are implicated in this thing. I once went to Everton looking for a second social worker, but they denied to say there's no, nothing like that. But people were queuing saying we're waiting for the social workers for the loans. And the infrastructure as well to the post office outlets. I think we mustn't take it for granted that it will be fixed, because it's not taken for, we don't see this for the first time in the presentation. Is there anything that's being done to make sure that the situation does improve? And what is the procedure for establishing an outlet to make sure that the infrastructure is complete as it is? Because these are very serious concerns, where there's no toilet, there's no good chest and chairs, because most of the beneficiaries are disabled people and also elderly people. I think that's all for now. Thank you very much. Oh, on this anticipation for a contract report, let us congratulate you in advance on your anticipation. We hope it will really happen, and we see a lot of improvement here, and thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't have a question for yourselves. Should I? No? Must I ask the question? No. I don't think I've got a question. It's just something that is that baffles my mind, and I know that I always go to the wrong side of people when I raise some of these things. You know, I don't understand for a second why we use the term like your war room. And I normally argue, and I know that my argument doesn't go too far, that, you know, we complain as South Africa that we've got so much violence. And the use of words like war, when we're actually dealing with a very flimsy matter. War against leaks, war against potholes, war against hunger. We declare war. When people are actually in war, their narrative is always towards peace and the things that people are seeking to achieve. I don't know whether in South Africa we've run out of innovation. Because anything that we want to dissolve, I mean, we deal with, we declare war. I hate the war word. But anyway, I can't, there's nothing, I'll never use it for, if I were to be anybody, if I can head a department, there will never be war in my department. And the auto-migration, it means you're going to do it without the people and advise them after. Alert them and deal with it. I guess the management of the transition becomes very crucial, because people tend to react very negatively on matters where they believe they have not been taken on board and certain things have happened without their consent. And the last matter is just for my deficits. You know, I think members have been to your centers and they have an appreciation of what happens there. For me, it's almost trying to understand something. You know, when we're told the world is round or the world is otherwise, you always imagine, because at school we didn't have even, you know, the culture, it's where you see the, when I did science, it was always trying to imagine things they were saying because we didn't have a lab. There was no lab. You had to imagine all these things that when they talk about this thing, then you have an imagination. And I know that you've been to their operations. I would want to, because I go past Joburg, Pretoria, and all those places, at least have an opportunity to go visit one of your entities in one Friday or Monday, so that I have an appreciation for what actually is happening. And just for interest sake, when you talk about VET region, Northern region, just put me in the frame. What are we talking? Where is this thing? Mama Julie, welcome back. Any questions from you? Okay. Sorry for that. I know I've been very silly.
Thank you very much, Shay. I just wanted to comment on the first comment made, and that is that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I truly believe there is, because as much as we've got all the challenges, we've got upsides, but those upsides are conditional on certain things that need to be done. For instance, the investment required to change the spaces where we operate so that we can be able to delight the customers that we have. The operational improvements, we know what needs to be done. Again, that is underpinned by the money that's required to turn some of the processes around. We understand where the cost management issues are. We know what the challenge is. For instance, people is one big area where we need to be doing things, but we know that it's not easy for us to go and take that big bloated number that you have in terms of the people and get rid of people. So it needs to be managed sensitively because of the entity that we are. And we also know that we've got challenges around costs on transport, and there are plans to implement that. And in a nutshell, I'm saying we know all these things, and I think the difference now is that we're beginning to do something about it, and the fact that we've got new sources of revenue, for instance, SASA and others, is going to help us to be able to invest where it matters so that you can be able to realize the benefits. So I'm still confident and I'm upbeat. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, for the questions. Let me deal with, if I can, most of them, and then perhaps there's some specific that the COO could address. On the question of transfer funds, I don't want to disclose publicly the exact amount. It wasn't 200 million, it was various amounts. That was just the speculative amount. That was the first transfer. But it's been regularised, and if a statement is required, I'm sure the department would think of that. Yeah, I agree with you. One beneficiary not paid is one too many. I don't think there was ever a beneficiary not paid. There were some misunderstandings. For example, a withdrawal limit of 1,600 at certain of the merchants, or a time lapse. So there was a 30-second time out, and what we were doing in the first month of learning was that we were registering swaps and paying transactions. The swap is a bus, the transaction is a Ferrari. We had them in the same lane, so they were getting in each other's way. All of those glitches have been addressed. So I don't know of any one beneficiary that hasn't been paid. And that's the truth of it. I mean, we talk about a 94% withdrawal rate. We have, in August, 100% transaction success rate. 100% of people who tried to get whatever their money they tried to get, they got. We've got buses and trains and Ferraris all coming into this. Okay. I think that Honourable McKenzie makes the point about mail, but we're never going to get out of mail. Mail still pays us 4.4 billion rand a year. It covers a lot of costs. It is our raison d'etre. However, we are a post office within an infrastructure. We're not a post office that owns an infrastructure. We are a subset of the future of that government-owned infrastructure. I take on the nose, on the chin, wherever I'm supposed to take it, the criticisms about our customer relationship management. It's been a disaster, and we are deeply focused on it, because the final resting point of complaints is my desk, and my desk is full.
you know, are getting more than hundreds a day. And so we have, and in particular, it's come into focus with having to deal with SASSA complaints now, which are slightly more urgent if you didn't get your money than if you, and everyone did, than if you didn't get your Christmas card. But so, yeah, we take that on the nose. It's wrong. It's below par. We're investing in it. We're combining the call centres. That's going to happen. A guarantee of a clearance date. I don't think we can give you a guarantee. We can give you our very best efforts because we're working damn hard, Honourable Mackenzie, at clearing that backlog. The psychology of backlogs is hard to deal with. So what's happened, and we're deeply involved in it, and the CIO is deeply involved in this stuff. We go there and we look at it. What behaviorally, after a month of backlog, the pile behind you gets so big that you're too scared to go to it. Okay, so you deal with what's in front of you on your desk. And so the complaints are people whose stuff has been there for 3 months that's not getting attended because it's just become too horrible to go back into the storeroom and get it. Okay, we've unearthed that and changed the behavior of how we deal with that. And so, I do think we'll solve it. I do think we'll solve it by end of September, but I'm not making a promise. I can't lie to Parliament, you pointed out. There won't be a necessity for a restart in the banking license. The process is now allowed to continue. So we're not set back by that 12-month. Yes, of course we all know that internet orders are out there, Honourable Member, but what we didn't anticipate is the nature of the goods. So we get thousands of tiny little packages from China that contain an earring that costs 49 cents. We have to process that and scan it and check it because it could be a diamond. And so we've got a clogged up mechanism checking rubbish that's coming into this country at zero, practically zero revenue for us. The UPU defines the revenue share to go mostly to the originator of the post. So these others, exporters into our country, we are clogged up with rubbish. We've had discussions, we've had our first very real discussion with a major e-commerce player that's already established itself in East and West Africa and see us as a southern link and then they're going to Egypt to do the northern link and we might well get into business with them because this kind of processing power, this kind of technology does not need to get reinvented. The marginal utility of rolling out their technology in our place is self-evident. So yeah, that's been a problem. I don't think the conveyor belt has started. I'll check that and come back to you because we didn't have the money on it. Okay. We take your point on parcels being diverted to Cape Town, Durban. It just happened. The sustainability debate that Honourable Member Shin raised is enjoying scrutiny. It's been taken seriously. Public-private partnerships, the restructuring of the group, who should own which pieces of the group and how they should be financed is definitely on the table now. And it's been on the table since the State of the Nation speech sort of welcomed it in January. These things take a lot of time, not only just to agree strategically, but the question of valuation then becomes a focal point. When we're all dealing with each other, it doesn't matter. When you start talking about who should own your shares and things, we get into deep discussion. But it's on the table. It's under consideration. It's not just a pipe dream. On the public service mandate, I don't want to speak on behalf. I can't speak on behalf of National Treasury, but the issue is enjoying serious attention. The amount is about 800 million a year, or 2.6 billion over the next 3 years, which is the MTEF period. I happen to know these numbers because these are the submissions that we put, and those will be checked out and whatever. And it is enjoying rigorous understanding. It has not been dismissed out of hand. The infrastructure upgrades this time are real because that's not our money. It's state money for a valid purpose. This whole question of being able to pay SASSA grants has got an economic profile that justifies investment. So a lot of people have said to us, or said in the public domain, it costs money. It doesn't cost money. This is investment to replicate private sector dependencies. It's not an expense. So the billions that are going to go into the infrastructure are once-off investments in upgrades, and they will provide forever capacity within the state. And so those numbers are publicly known. We've really invested hundreds and hundreds of millions in the upgrading of our 865 branches.
Someone made the point earlier about the dignity question. This cash payment was kind of forced upon us 3 or 4 months ago, and we are being expected to, and we take on the challenge to provide services way above those that were ever provided by CPS. CPS used to go and collect your money under a tree. There were nothing, but we, as the state, we take on that responsibility of improving the dignity situation. The queues, I want the CEO perhaps to augment this. Perhaps you can talk about those things that relate to SARS, the queues, the question of one staff, and so on. We take it very seriously. We've got down to the point where we go and deliver soup and meals, and where we transport people that are stuck at a particular pay point to an ATM. And sometimes we've worked out the economics of it. Sometimes it's easier to go and fetch someone and pay for the taxi than to continue with a pay point at that services a couple of hundred people. Better to go and fetch them. And all of those logistics and optimization, and I'll ask the CEO to talk about the security, has become a big issue. Even perceptually, never mind actually, there's a perception, partly valid, that there's a lot of money swishing around the system at the end of the month in the post office that wasn't really prepared for that function at some point in time. And one of the challenges we've had is that the CIT capacity in the country, the cash in transit capacity in the country, has been absorbed a lot, Fidelity, for example, by CPS, and that contract hasn't expired, and they won't release those vehicles into our world as yet. But that's another month of that nonsense. Okay. We had a big problem with our service providers that we hadn't paid. Avis withdrew their... I don't want to get too public here about all of the detail, but it's on my desk. We had trucks withdrawn because monies were due. We had branches. We had, at one stage, we had 75 branches that were closed, or where electricity had been switched off, or where the door just simply been locked by the landlord. We had our, even for the DTT project, we had our forklifts removed. And to be perfectly honest, there was a point in time, which is when we started looking at our internal resources, where, if we hadn't settled certain of those liabilities, the very essence of the company would have been at risk, and we would have, in not doing what we did, breached laws and threatened the very survival of that's been dealt with. People are understanding our position, but their tolerance levels are also related to their own economics. So some guy in the landlord has got a small centre, he also needs the money to exist. So we've paid all of our branches and leases up to 60 days, if I've got that still correct. So the longest outstanding we have is 60 days. We're in discussions with all of them. We've reached agreements with all of them about the future payment profile. I've sat down with the CEO of Avis. I've got personally involved in all of these debates with our creditors, and they've got an understanding. And we have made some payments to appease them. But there's still people that like you, perhaps, Honourable McKenzie, have less faith in the promise than the cash. So we're having to cough up and deal with some of those things. A communication is a big issue for us. It was recognized by the IMC and the communication, Minister of Communication. And we've been mandated by the Minister of Communication to get together, particularly as it relates to SASA. So GCIS is driving a campaign for us to better communicate. But I hadn't thought of the point that you were making, Honourable Member, which is that we are getting the message across in churches and schools and communities, but we're not getting finally to the gogo out in the final phone. And so I take that point, and we'll take that on and think about how we can do it. Cash, we are engaged with state security, but I'm going to leave the CEO to talk about those questions relating to SARS in particular. The audit was an extraordinary effort. We just made a rule that we're going to have an qualified audit. And so we worked day and night, answered all of the questions, and we will have an unqualified audit. Because you can't expect to go into the capital markets unless you've got a clean house. So that was a prerequisite for all of our capital costs and all of those things. But I say that with the only reservation, it hasn't actually been signed yet because the AGM hasn't taken place and so on. And one of the issues that needs finally to be addressed, which which I didn't fully answer your question, Honourable Member Shin, was the processes within National Treasury in terms of the sustainability. And so which are underway, our submissions have all been made, and we are encouraged by where that's going. We don't see it as an issue. Then, Chair, if I can address some of your things. Yeah, war room. Well, you know, I've been into that meeting room sometimes, and war is a very good description of sometimes what's happening there. I agree with you. We should find another name. Let's find another name.
Yes, okay.
We call it the Nerve Center.
Stratcom.
Or the Stratcom.
No,
we can't. You see, I get resistance. And when you talk about the war room, it becomes raw, which is war backwards. Okay, so we'll deal with that. I take on the point about the auto-migration. We anticipate that this might be a couple of 100,000 people, like literally 200,000 or 300,000 people out of a population of 10.7 million, or out of a population of cash of, so it's less than 1% or whatever the number is, if my maths is correct. You know, I don't want to say we're doing something, imposing something on you for your own good, but we are. Okay, so you will not be put into a situation where when you arrive with your old card, we won't instantaneously give you a new card and cash. So what we are doing is enabling a system where you might not have heard the communication, or you might not have been able to come and do it because you've been sick or something. So, you know, I don't think it will be seen as forced. It will be seen as an auto-completion of the system. And the last point I'll make, if I might, Chair, that you made about visiting our facilities. We would love that, Chair. And what I think you'll find is something which we're all dealing with right now, which is culture change. Because ultimately, it's not me or the executive or the board that's going to define who works or doesn't work at SALPO. It's the culture of the organization. And one of the challenges we had, and I addressed the entire staff a couple of weeks ago, one of the challenges we've had with that sleepy organization is to convince people of even the likelihood of success. You know, failure becomes a habit, and it eventually becomes a refuge. People hide under the excuse of failure. It's a safe place to live. And I don't want to make a speech here as I did there, but we are starting to see the fundamental behavioral change in people who are starting to anticipate and think about the possibility of success. And it's going to clear out a lot of people. A lot of people are not going to make it. And some people are going to become superstars. And when I first made the speech 8, 10, 12 months ago, everyone gave me a blank stare. I made it 3 Wednesdays ago, and about 10% of the people started shaking their heads and getting up and getting things done. And that's, I think, that the opportunity of us now with SASA and our infrastructure upgrade is going to invite the performers and leave the rest behind. But please come, I'll walk with you. Let's go and have a look. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll adopt the Nerve Center, Operational Center, Honourable Mackenzie. But I think, Honourable Mackenzie, you raise a very important issue around the customer care. And sometimes we underestimate its importance. And I think the CFO earlier on spoke about our investment in our infrastructure. Organization big as ours, they actually invest in CRM. We don't have a fully fledged customer relationship management system in place that will actually enable proactive oversight. You have a call center, but you can't really have a back-end integration into your daily operation so that one can be able to see even whether there's clogging on the calls. You only pick it up on social media because someone will be posting to say, it's now 30 minutes, I'm still holding. Then you are being reactive. And I don't think that speaks to the fundamentals of good customer service. So that investment around building a fully-fledged CRM system will begin to take us forward in relation to that. But also from an institutional reform perspective, we are actually also defining where who is the owner of the customer. Is it the business, the operations, or does it still sit with, because currently it's with commercial. And we believe in the operations because we are fulfilling the demand, so we must take responsibility. So those are the institutional reform issues that are happening internally. But I do agree with you that we really have to up our game around managing the call center, but also just our processes in terms of ensuring that the front end and the back end are somewhat integrated. And then the issue of, I think CEO covered so many issues, but on the issue of a long queue, if I may regress a bit, Councillor Mackenzie, on the 31st of each or 30th of every month, every beneficiary gets their money in their card.
So just a point of order. I was
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. Honorable member. Okay, I know you in his previous life. I'm sorry. My apologies. Honorable member.
You wanted to say Comrade McKenzie.
Honorable member, the issue of the payment, every beneficiary, we receive a payment file on the 20th of every month. And then we start processing it. By the 31st or end of every month, everybody beneficiary has those that have been migrated to the SAPO. We get a payment file, we process that, so they already have the money in their account. So the issue is the channel in which they access that. Obviously, it works in our favor for them to do it over the counter at SAPO because there's a tariff linked to that in terms of our revenue generation. Whereas if they go to an ATM, the bank through InterCharge, they make that money. And then obviously it's not to them because that is already subsidized. So we encourage them to use either POS, the point of sale, or over the merchants or over the counter within the post office because that's how we make our own money as well. So in relation to the July issue, when because of the 30 to 60 transaction per second, so when they were withdrawing because of the volumes and the clocking, it was rejecting. They can see there's money in their account, so they can't access it. That's where the frustration happened. But in terms of them having the money, everyone had their money. So when they went to the other merchants, they were able to get that. But that is why we then said we put in these mechanisms. We worked with BankServe because they were able to tell us exactly where the problem is. So we had to actually ensure that we actually meet the industry service level agreements on transactions per second, hence the successful payment during the August month. So we use the July month as a basis to really look at what went wrong, how can we improve so that our beneficiaries can never experience what they went through in July. And I do agree with Honorable Member McKenzie that one beneficiary being inconvenienced is one beneficiary too many, and understanding their plight. And I think it's in our, we actually also ensured that we apologize for the inconvenience, and we really took responsibility for the glitches. We were able to go out there in the public domain, really extending our sincere apologies. But what we are also finding it exciting and heartwarming is that our principals on the ground who are dealing with communities are beginning to also assist us in terms of sharing information, the schools. And I think communication can never be enough because ultimately it needs to touch to the targeted audience, the beneficiaries. And then the question is that do you focus on the below the line or you just worry about what is happening in the above the line space, because there's been so much confusion also happening because CPS also has its own communication propaganda that is happening there, and the beneficiaries get confused. So that is why we then had to channel through the GCIS and also putting our money in the same pot to communicate a government messaging. So the issues of whether it's being effective is something that we monitor on an ongoing basis. But communication can never be enough. Even optimizing on the public broadcast stations, the PBS stations, as well as the community radio stations. But more importantly, now we are using loud hailing in the communities, in the rural areas, using our mobile branches that we already have. But we will continue to do our best in that regard. One of the key things that we've also established around our ability to eradicate long queues, people, they always want to queue on the first day of the month. And we are saying we need to also create awareness and educate our beneficiaries to say they can either come, because post office will never go anywhere, it's still there, so they can come any day between the 1st and the 20th. But in relation to the cash, what we actually piloted in the Northern Cape, we discovered that we staggered it until the 8th, and we realized that even the cash beneficiaries, they actually found alternative method of accessing their money. So we had lesser people getting cash. Even in KZN in other areas, you will actually cater for about 400,000 people. Only 100 people will be coming for their cash on their date of payment because they've already used other platforms. So it then told us that we haven't really done extensive communication where we're saying with this card it's interoperable, you can actually use various platforms. And I think that's the kind of messaging that we really need to intensify to educate our beneficiaries. And I think politically, I think it makes sense because beneficiaries right now, one of the key outcries that they are saying, if we close pay points, they won't have the opportunity for local economic development. And I'm arguing that outside the post office, within that vicinity, you can work with the municipalities where we can have permits, you know, allowing traders to actually trade during that particular process in getting them a trading permit, as opposed to be fixated to a pay point. Because then we are double dipping, because there's a fixed cost in managing that whilst we are also dealing with our cost, because the securities must be on both sides, both at the pay point as well as within the post office. So it's an issue of economics and efficiencies, and this is why we are saying once we've migrated beneficiaries who were paid in this particular pay point, it doesn't make sense to keep it open, especially beneficiaries that are living within the national payment infrastructure in the urban areas, because there are alternatives. The beneficiaries we should be fixating on are those that are within the residual areas, in the deep rural area, where they are relying on either us coming in with the CI, the cash in transit, or our mobile branches to actually execute that particular payment. And that's what we are dealing with at the moment. And then in terms of the communication in the rural areas, I think utilizing schools, utilizing all the touch points, as well as working with local leadership, your traditional authorities, and I think it's something that we'll continue to do in that regard. One of the key issues that we've picked up, and I think every business person will use that, people understand the strategic importance and the national importance of a SASSA project. So service providers, they know that you can't, even if you, one of the things that we experience is that they were coming, the CIT, because they are spread too thin. Some are still also locked into the SASSA, a CPS contract, and then others, they also supply other commercial retail outlets. So because we are owing them some money, they will not prioritize us. So in terms of actioning a contract management for penalties and everything, because you owe me, you can't dictate to me, so when do I apply punitive measures? So those are the things that we need to deal with in terms of ensuring that all our I's are dotted, all our T's are crossed, so that the ultimate person who is supposed to be focusing on the beneficiary is not inconvenienced. We had incidences in the Free State where landlords will just lock their post offices because we are owing them money and the people are already queuing. So we have to actually deal with that issue of our funding properly, hence the issue we were discussing with earlier on to say, what can we do now, knowing that we have excess capital that needs to be utilized to actually deal with the key issue of national interest, obviously within the legal parameters. So right now we also had a debrief with all the cash in transit organization. Obviously I can't elaborate further in terms of our tactics and our strategy, but the issue is, we, instead of delivering the cash on the date of payment, we've put in certain mechanisms so that everything is ready. The team just opens up in the morning and service people. We're working with the security cluster around those in order to mitigate the late arrival of cash. Because we know Okoko, they wake up very early in the morning, and the last thing you need is for them to be waiting until 10 o'clock. It doesn't look well. It's also an African, if I may call it that way. So our team, they understand that we have to also change our operating working hours, because they know I start work at 8, I finish at 4. Not in the branches anymore. We've engaged labor in that regard to say during the payment, and the fact that the court has reiterated and reinforced the essential service, something, the essential service status of the payment of grant, everyone understands that you only close when the last beneficiary in the queue has been serviced. So these are the things, the mindset change that we are dealing with as an organization. And then on the issue of the infrastructure, is we put in, as CEO indicated, remember in May, in March, in May, we were told now we are dealing with cash, whereas from the beginning of December when we signed the MSA, our plan was around those branches that are within the 5 kilometer radar of the pay point, which then translated to 862 branches. But the minute you are told to deal with cash, you then have to deal with your entire network, the 1,614 branches. So we needed to deal with what Honorable Member was talking about. Other branches have a one-man show. The systems are not, there's no connectivity and everything. So the 311 million that I'm talking about begins to deal with ensuring that there's no one-man or one-woman show branch. So the HR component in terms of filling all the vacancies, we are now doubling that from 2,600 branches, warm bodies in terms of the tellers. Our number is 5,000 and we continuously filling that. We are looking at end or middle of October where we would have filled all the position across the branches. The network, the branch infrastructure in terms of computers, point of sale, new point of sale devices, keypads, fingerprint devices, the biometric devices, all of that is what we are rolling out in every branch. So there is no branch that is not going to have any infrastructure to service the beneficiary. They're supported by the network upgrade process by Utelcom to make sure that connectivity and the signal strength is there. So that is the work that we are doing currently. And then on the issues of the audit, we've introduced the management letter action planning. We are proactively monitoring, utilizing the management report from the AG and also institutionalizing it so that even different business units, they are not only dealing with it as a reactive issue, but it should form part and parcel of your own governance framework within your respective units. And I think the results this year are as a result of the intervention we put in place to ensure that people are taking issues of management reporting, governance, management letter action planning. And I think the results are speaking for themselves. Thank you.
If I may have one more minute. It has to be said publicly that the COO, as project leader of this SASA initiative, has made an extraordinary difference to the organization, as have a lot of people. The organization will never be the same as it was. We are now in a real-time, technology helps. I mean, I have a WhatsApp group here which operates 24 hours, throughout the weekends, throughout nights. We get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, we go to bed at 9 o'clock at night, and this thing keeps working. And so this opportunity which government has afforded us, this challenge which government has presented us as an organ of state, has got us to stand up and be counted. And there are people that are doing an extraordinary amount of work, and the very blood within the system has changed forever. Thank you.
Any follow-ups, Mr. McKenzie, Madam Sotefi, Mama Julie?
Thank you, Chair. Primarily addressed to the CFO. I thought these might have been covered by someone else, but it's fine. In terms of the interim budget adjustment for SASA, how much extra money are you looking for from Treasury? Then also in your sustainability slide, you refer to the SAPA branch upgrade for the SASA project, and there's been talk that your IT systems are in place. I have a document that was sent to me by some correspondent, where on the 7th of August, there's a request for allocation of funding to replace branch POS infrastructure. So has this financing been approved? Because it seems to be quite a bit of money. Has it been approved? And yeah, okay, that's the answer. Then your business case with National Treasury, how does that differ? That's quite a long-winded question, really better covered by a presentation, but I'd be interested to know how that differs from your annual performance plan. Is there any fundamental basics that we're looking at that you would present to Treasury that isn't included in your plan? But you can take some time to think about that, and perhaps you can give it, with the permission of the chairperson, maybe give it to us in writing, or you know, if that makes it easy for you, because I'm sure there are technicalities involved. Then I'm just trying to get an idea on your future revenue. How much money per month are you making out of the SASA grant distribution business? I'm just asking you to give me a number, give me a comfort number or a discomfort number, so I can get an idea of how much money you're going to make from SASA that's going to mitigate the losses you're currently making. Okay, so it's around there. And then just back to mail for a bit. You know, South African Post Office, post. How long does it take to send a parcel, and what mechanism do you use to send a parcel or a letter from here to Britain? And I use Britain because I think of the Union Castle steamships when I was a kid, how they would take all the surplus mail to.
The Prime Minister is here, so it can happen.
So just... Thank you. So just... What was that comment made on the eulogy in Parliament about our departed Radebe? How humour can just alert us to the fact that basically we're all humans, you know. So I always enjoy it. So how long to send an international parcel? And what mechanism do you use to send that parcel? Are you holding back parcels? If you get a shipment of 10 parcels going to Britain and it's not enough, what... You know, do you hold that back for 2 months until another 10 come and you get some sort of economy of scale? Or what do you do? What can I communicate to members of the public that ask me that question? Thank you, Chairperson.
You know, my talk is called
on the issue of communications again, I think on rural areas, the strategy you have alluded to is just on point. But coming to urban areas, we have a problem with the suburbs because loud hailing is not allowed. I think radios, you know, they remain the most effective means of communication whereby everyone will have access. Because even in the urban areas, we have people who are beneficiaries and who may not be able to receive the message. And I didn't hear the response on the procedure to establish an outlet, but I think that in my mind that there should be a form laying down the conditions that there must be a trail, there must be this, there must be this before you establish it. And this IGPS that it says the most of challenges received related to the HPS system being slow in the morning. Usually you think systems are slow maybe in the afternoon because they've been working over, you know, from the morning. So if it's been slow in the morning, what would be the problem? Is it an old system that needs to be updated, upgraded, or something else? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think just a comment to say that it is good to see that the post office has turned the corner and that they... Will you please protect me, Chairperson? I'm being intimidated. side remarks next to me. He makes the comment that they have not turned the corner yet. Well, it depends on whether you see a glass half full or half empty. Can I just say? I think what we see is a complete commitment. And I wish the same could be said for some of our other entities who are in serious trouble. What I really see, and I want to commend the executive management as well as the board for taking this project and trying to make every success of it. Chair, I just wanted to ask, and I was in fact anticipating some replies to the risk and mitigating factors. I must say my concern is regarding the safety. You know, we have seen that cash in transit heists have become the order of the day, and obviously that is going to add to additional costs. So are they preparing for that? And then secondly, also my concern regarding the labour problems that SAPO is facing. We understand what the problems are, but is management, are they comfortable that they will be able to get them everybody on board? And the last issue is the use of the PINs. You know, if you think about SASSA beneficiaries, many, many of them are in fact elderly people or headed, you know, elderly headed households where social grants are paid to. So whereas that is a key safety mechanism, I'm just concerned that it is going to possibly be one of the challenges. And, you know, I'm not convinced that the mitigating steps will, in fact, overcome the problem. So are they also, do they have a plan A and a B and maybe a plan C? Thank you, Chair.
Sapo.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, as Honourable McKenzie pointed out, sometimes you need a point of order. For the record, I'm Postman Pat. I'm not at liberty to disclose the exact amount of money that we'll make out of SASSA for a couple of reasons. First of all, the final pricing hasn't been signed off by National Treasury as between the different channels. But let me say this, that if we solve the public service, and you can quote me on this, Honourable McKenzie, if we solve the, and let me make it clear what we're looking for in the public service mandate. We're not looking to make money out of it. We're looking to view it as a separate insulated cost recovery mandate, okay, which is the difference between our approach to what the previous approaches have been. If we were to solve that, once the SASSA contract is in full swing, and if we were to deal with the Section 189 discussion, SAPA will be a profitable, self-funding organization forever. So those are the sizes of the numbers, okay, and you can quote me on that, because I promise you we've focused on it. And that's why we fought so hard on this deal. So that's the thing. I'm as interested... Well, look, we've got 5.4 million beneficiaries that have migrated to us, okay, out of the full 10.7, just to give big picture numbers. I anticipate that will go to something like 7 or 8, and the balance will be in the commercial banks, and now I'm going to get into trouble for this. I think that in time, the those using commercial banks will discover that it's much cheaper to use SAPA. And so with the full migration of the beneficiaries, you can work out the numbers, Mr. McKenzie, which are that we've got 10.7 million people paying something between 5 Rand and 20 Rand a month per transaction. It's a big number. Okay. Per month. Okay. So I'm as interested as you are in this exercise about the time it would take a parcel. We'll do some work on that and we'll come back to you. On exactly, you know, the comparators. Okay, so we'll do that. Labour is, I would venture to say that Labour has become a partner of ours. This last increase, the strike negotiations only lasted 2 weeks, okay, and that was including the CCMA intervention, which wasn't much use. Because we talked the truth to each other, but you've got to see, the real fight wasn't about us. It was about us relative to other SOEs. So the aggregate increase in other SOEs or Paris, whatever you want to call them, over the last 3 years was 21%. The aggregate increase in SAPA before this increase was 6%. Okay. So the debate was, so, you know, must you lose a lot more money to get more money? And so, you know, I think we came to a very reasonable understanding and we settled very quickly. So I think Labour is a partner, first point. Second point, we applied to the court to be defined as legally as an essential service in relation to the social payment. That has knock-on effects of essential service implications for us. So I think our labour position, and it's personal. You know, I talk to the leaders of the unions within the bargaining unit almost on every second or third day. We've got cell phone contact with each other. We try and discuss them because we know we're an organisation that is now worth protecting. I think a lot of the other issues related to the reconciliation of our discussions with National Treasury and APP, to be honest, I haven't applied my mind to that. I will, how those things exactly reconcile. I don't want to get into a debate about, you know, which rules should apply to us when we get into different spaces, but I think that will be a subsequent debate. I don't know the answer to it. And then on the risk, again, I want to ask the CEO to talk about it. We've got to be careful about this because we are...
at the highest level in government talking about risk mitigation, including state security and other arms. If you ask me for a wish list, one day we won't involve outside private security services because it will be a state function managed and protected by the state. But I don't want to get too explicit. I don't know if you saw what they're doing nowadays. I mean, there was a situation in one of the towns where they literally took a bucky, drove into a spa, and ripped out the entire auto bank, you know, put it on the back of the bucky, and went to it in different times. Thank you, Chair. The CIO was.
Perhaps don't go. I don't want this committee to... No, I don't want us to take the blame tomorrow that things happened in this committee. Sensitive matters, let them remain where they belong. But talk on the principal issues and not... Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I think the CEO has covered on the issues of the number of days it takes to take the outbound to the UK. Suffice to say there are standards in terms of the UPU standards, but also one has to actually reconcile that with economies of scale. Because if I'm spending almost 100,000 to take away something that cost me 20,000 rand, it's not commercially viable. And if you look at the model in the SAPO right now, we are getting more inbound and lesser outbound, and one has to balance that. But I think the thorough analysis in terms of dealing with the analytics is something that we may come back to present. What we wanted to do, Honorable Mwekezi, was the issue of accounting for the glitches we had in July and we were trying to show the committee that the August pay run did not really have glitches. The only glitch was the slow response in the morning, because this is related to the network monitoring by Telkom, because this is supposed to be a fully managed service. So you start looking at the once there's a drop, someone must actually boost the signal and everything. So we picked that up. It was immediately dealt with. It never affected any beneficiary because all the transactions were 100% done. And again, we also get the BASA, the bank serve graph daily during the payment cycle. So we have our own monitoring mechanisms, but even the bank service is able to show you the transaction performance, because in terms of the industry SLA, there's a transaction per second, and I can actually share that with the committee, it's all green. Whereas in July, there were reds and greens, and that way we had to make those mitigation. But we felt that we needed to just share that we struggled in the morning and everything started picking up. It never even took more than 30 minutes. Because there's a team that is dedicated 24/7 to actually monitor that. And then the issue of a splitting of the card issuance functionality plus the transaction processing functionality, considering that we also have to prioritize swap. So we don't stop during the payment cycle to do the card swap, because our goal is to completely eliminate the CPS. And that on its own had its own challenges, but now it's been adequately resolved. I think the committee members have advised us on the cash issue. Suffice to say that we're a net jog. We also are working through the JCPS around the security cluster to make sure that from a crime intelligence point of view, we are able to pick up some of these alien activities that are happening there. But as the CEO has indicated, our ultimate goal is to ensure that we completely eliminate cash payment. It's expensive. It's actually risky, not only for our employees, but for the beneficiaries themselves. In the Eastern Cape, there was a robbery where they came with AK-47. They actually assaulted our employees at the branches and also killed one of the securities. So it really is becoming a national crisis, if I may call it that way. So it's not in our interest. That is why I'm saying politically, I know that there has been a pushback from some of the beneficiaries in other areas where they really want the status quo to remain. And I think we have to come together with a clear plan to try and explain to the beneficiaries why it's safer to have your money in your card as opposed to wanting to get it over the under the tree or in a pay point, because that's how you've been doing it in the past. We can only pay those that don't have alternatives. But where there are alternatives, let's rather utilize that, because as and when you want, you can go access your money. And it's less risky to the beneficiary. And these are the things that we're dealing with, Chairperson. Thank you. Oh, okay, the issue of PINs, as I've indicated earlier on, what we have done, we are actually empowering all our branches. It's part of the infrastructure rollout that we're doing, whereby we are saying the elderly will be encouraged to actually get paid over the counter, because that way the biometric authentication will happen, because we experienced this during the August pay run where there were lots of elderly people who were forgetting their PINs. And the last thing we need is for them to be depending on somebody else who might end up actually robbing them. So it's a risk issue, and we have to also deal with that, Chairperson.
Could colleagues, are we fine? I guess we should end our engagement here, but yeah, also to thank SAPO. I think they agree with the colleagues that they are doing quite a good job. I think they're getting there, and I think they will make the country power proud. And I think let's give them the necessary support. And indeed, I would like to confirm, you know, during the crisis period, I did hear the CEO on several radio platforms when she was really addressing issues quite extensively. But you may obviously not be on every platform that is there, but I think matters have been, you can only improve on what has happened, find other avenues, and make sure that the communication does try and go to everyone. But yeah, all the best. We can only wish you luck and hope that the inspiration that you are driving within the company can actually be realized, because you are as good as your team. You are as good as your team. If you get everyone inspired, if you are able to inspire 10 people, 10% of and up it up, you almost reaching your ultima, because it takes your 20% to achieve the 80. So once you make that max, you can actually even inspire the rest of the team to play along, and can only wish you well. And we will continue to do our work, both to support you, but also to make you to account, because that's what is expected of us. And that's where our interactions with SAPO will end. Are you fine, DDG? Okay. Colleagues, we have some work. You have your assignment. Yes, madam.
One question. If you've got a challenge of SASSA in rural areas, where do I report? Can we have your number, please?
My number is 082. Okay, I thought everyone would want to have my number. Thank you. I'll exchange.
If you have cards, you can give it to members. Don't call her at ungodly hours. Colleagues, Do you have, you still have energy to deal with the minutes? How? No, you can't. You have to, thanks, Chal. Let's just allow them to move out and then we do our own internal matters. Mama Julie, alles van die beste. Wem vela ubana sicqedile. Wena uhambe phela wena uhlala la. Wena you are a permanent furniture. Okay. We shall continue after the two senior citizens have concluded their discussion. Thank you, sir. Thank you, CEO. I'll call you and check you out. Colleagues, we have two remaining items. One is an announcement and the other one are the minutes. Do you have any choice to deal with the minutes? Whilst you are looking at the minutes, just to, you remember the matter that I had raised the other day, that we had launched an application for yourselves to attend the conferences coming in a week and a half from today. That application has been approved, but it has terms and conditions that apply. The terms are that you can only leave at the adjournment of the sitting. But what is happening on that day? Sometimes they impose unnecessary, what do you call it? So, on that day, questions to the Deputy President. I mean, there's no voting. So, for all I care, unless if you, what does it mean? Okay, that's the condition. Attendance, whether you are participating or not, you will have to. But in other words, after the adjournment at 4:30, it's only then that you can vamush.
With all due respect, it's not possible for us to negotiate that we don't sit until 4 o'clock. We do attend, but we leave a little bit earlier.
Mr. McKenzie is the chief whip in charge of that responsibility.
No, if we did that anyway, we would only arrive in Durban after the 15 minutes of the day of
We are not residents of Joburg, Mr. McKenzie.
No, sir.
Mackenzie, behave. Okay, it's fine.
It's two nights. It's Tuesday night and the Wednesday night.
Yes.
That's Thursday.
It's Monday.
Well, there are those that will fly same day so that they start in the morning. So, yeah. So, all the finer details will be dealt with the lady there at the back. The logistic matters sort out for the cats and the dogs and all those things. She'll handle the dogs and the cats. Shall we jump into our minutes? We do not have the quorum, so what we will do is to walk through the minutes. What is our quorum? No, no, Miss Julie had to run to this other thing. Sorry? No, 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 it doesn't work that way. I see AC branch. No, what I suggest we do, let's walk through the minutes and not adopt it. So that when we come into, when we have a quorum, we can then adopt them. Is that fine? Moi. Anyway, it is only the two parties that sit in the meeting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the lady will also be...
And
we will we'll start with the minutes of the 13th of March. Is that 12 o'clock? Okay. As long as the Prime Minister is safe from that ban. Where is my 13th? Okay. Okay. The 13th is from your hard copies, you can see that it is a landscaped minutes. First page, Madam Chakot, are you fine?
I've got the original, so it's not a truncated
version.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first paragraph, opening remarks by the acting chairperson. It says, Secretary opened the meeting on behalf of the chairperson who was part of the sent by Parliament. And we need to actually say who was sent by Parliament. Should it be of the delegation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And it reads as... Yeah, no, that's fine. Okay.
No.
Yes, sir.
The last line... that in the absence of the chairperson and acting chairperson of the committee, insert the word of.
Good. Next, I mean, madam.
This is the top of page 3, the paragraph starting taking over the proceedings. After Mr. Tetsi's name, you've got a capital M. It doesn't need to be a capital M. And then in point number 2, the minister of the department is Dr. Siyabonga Tweli, not Mr.
Yeah, definitely a doctor. Any other adjustment? For Khane Batsai? Yes.
Sorry, it's some time since I read these. I need to actually refresh my mind here. The last paragraph, the one that starts, the committee observed, the last bullet point. On the second last line, we said that there would be separation of accounts between a retail and wholesale operators. It's not license. Between a retail operator and a wholesale operator. They're down here as licenses. They should be operators. Change license to operator.
Get it?
Okay.
And then the Volgende Bladzij, page number 5.
Yeah.
Alpha, madam. Oh, Mam Tsotetsi. Okay. No, we're not done yet.
Oh, by the way, yes, so I'm sorry.
Yes, we will not reach that stage. Okay. Madam?
Yes, the second last line on page 5, this bullet point starting the committee called for a clear implementation. The second last line requested the department Sorry, no, that's my mistake. So it should stay. Okay.
And the last page. Nothing, so we can't move. We take the next item, which is number 20, the 20th. First page. Number 2. Number 3, page 3, Madam Chin.
Thank you. In the big paragraph that starts, there are two major issues. The second line, where employees were in acting capacities, not capacity, I think there's more than one. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the seventh line, starting regulated by a PIN code, not card.
Code, yeah. PIN code, yeah. Baba McKenzie?
Thank you, Chair. Under same page, under point 3, presentation by the SAPO. Second line, he stated that SAPO takes the objective of the implementation. I think that should be the corporatization of the post bank.
Okay, fine. And then the last page, no. The page number 4. Page number 5. Shall we move to the last page? And no mover, no shaker. Shall we take 17 April? First page for Hannah Blotsey. These are just check if there are any mistakes of the surnames and stuff, because they can be very problematic sometimes. Up to page number 3. Page number 4. Page number 5. Yes, madam.
1.6. The third line is not supposed to be a new acting CFO. Because the other one is suspended, it's not like it's a new appointee.
Just.
By implication, say a new CFO has been appointed, it's like this one has been done with. Because suspension, the process still continues. So this one is acting.
No, yes, it's two different people. The new CFO had been appointed. And then the CEO had been suspended. That's the one that was replaced by another board member. Yeah? Was it a board member or something like that? Yeah. Baba McKenzie?
Thank you, Chair. Same paragraph. I think Professor Clarkson's name is spelled incorrectly. It's got a double S in it. Perhaps you could just ensure that consistency through the document.
So did you check it in the first page 1, 2, 3?
Yeah, it's got a double S.
It's correct there.
It's correct in the opening page, just not
okay.
In the part of the document. Thank you, Chair.
Good. The page thereafter, which is page number 6, and the last page. Number 24, April. First page and page number 2. Shall we jump to page number 3, unless if there are any corrections? Page number 3. Page number 4. Page number 5. The last page as well, page number 6. Page 8 May. Page number 1. Second page. Page number 3. Page number 4. Ikhasi elilandelayo. Ikhasi lokugcina. Of May, the longest of the minutes. Page 1 and page 2. Date number 15, May. You know, Theresa may not like the fact that during her month we had such a short meeting. Apologies, I will throw it unconditionally. 15th May, first page, second page, page number 3, page number 4, and page 5 and 6. Mhlaka 22 May, ikhasi lokuqala. Elesibili. Elesithathu. Elesine. Elesihlanu. Yes, so we won't be in my machine.
On page 5?
Yeah, bo.
Okay. The second line at the top of page 5. If the review is accepted, then Telkom would provide primary help.
Is that so? It's possible. It can happen.
Telkom.
No. You see what happened here? It was an explanation. It was an explanation by the... Was it the board chairperson? Is it not the med? Or one of those guys who said, by time X, Telkom will be dispensing medical, what do you call? In other words, they will be providing health services. It means you will get your treatment. So it was a matter that was raised. I mean, they say even collections, you don't have to go to the pharmacy, you'll get it somewhere.
It's not primary health that they're dispensing, it's medications.
Medication.
Yeah, actually. So should we change that to would provide primary healthcare medication?
Yes, medication. The Volkswagen BNR plate?
Sorry, Chair, if I
could
just add that.
Yeah.
Perhaps change then Telkom could. The change would to could. It makes it more like...
Actually, it is a will. It shall. It will be. But it's okay. Whichever way you write it.
Dispensing they're not acting as pharmacy.
No. As conduit. As a conduit.
Yes. When we say provide primary health medications, it's not making it sound like they're the pharmacies or they're the doctors themselves, the healthcare practitioners. They're actually just acting
as a distribute point for
primary health.
Correct. Correct. Courier services of some kind. Distributions, yes. Kasile Stupa. Mama.
The second last bullet point, the committee was concerned. The line starting was set aside by a court after it had found irregularities in the procurement process.
Found. You know, the sad thing is I did my school in isiZulu and not in my own mother tongue. Very bad, ne? Ngikhuluma lezi zinto lezi ngesiZulu, angikwazi ukukhuluma ngesiNdebele. That was the last page, page number seven. I was denied the right. My rights were violated.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, I feel it.
I'm a great believer in mother tongue education. Yes, they were. It's a disadvantage in your school.
Yeah. The page 29, is this... No, okay, the last one. There is something in the last one that I know that it was... Okay, page number 29 May, or you don't have the last meeting.
I haven't added it.
Okay. So we're dealing with the backlog that must be concluded before September, but we are doing it before August. Mr. McKenzie. 29th of May, first page. Second page, third page, and page number four. Yeah, it's fine. It's okay. In future, we'll find a better way of handling minutes. I am not very good. You can see that if there's one area where I'll be scored zero, it's dealing with minutes. Baba Magas?
Sorry, Chair. I noticed in the minutes, in the last paragraph, we referred to Mr. Alf Wiltz, who is the legal advisor in Bongani Togo. But we don't have them on the list of delegates. Did they attend the committee meeting, or did we send them something in writing on this? Do you know?
So we eliminated that. Selendida.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye, Nanki. Kapa Makinzi Siamon. Okay, but wait a minute, there's something. What were we dealing with? How did they come into the picture? But did we deal with the bill here? Did we? I get the problem that yes, you're right. Thank you for the good memories. Some people can still, people have got good super memories. Colleagues, yeah, so these minutes we will adopt next time when we meet, which is next week, and we will have the other minutes which we don't have now in front of us till we meet them next week. That gives us some time for a break. Thank you for the attendance, members.
Thank you.
Next week we'll be dealing with the bill.
The bill. Yes. It's a very important bill, and the ICA one, and I know that everybody is waiting for it. If it is one bill that is going to draw a lot of attention to the committee, etc. Now, what I do not know, and I know that the leadership of the institution does not want us to take anything beyond what we have. I did say last time that even this university bill came at the tail end. We actually brought it in after the timeline was crossed now. But I heard that when the president responded last week on the, when he was responding to the questions in the House, he did bring this bill as a very important and almost like saying it's a priority matter that must be dealt with, because it has a huge financial issues. I suspect that that bill may come in. I suspect that there may be a special request that it be treated, given some emergency attention. That's what I suspect would happen. But we don't have the bill in front of us, and it's still within the cabinet. It's a pity that gentleman is not here. But do you have any idea?
Oh, actually, I have called you in communicating and then.
Sorry?
Honorable Shim was asking the copy. So I've asked the department, so the state law advisor, they were still finalizing that bill after it came back from the cabinet.
So, cabinet has approved the bill?
Yes.
So, it will be coming to the legislature. I think it will be a question of them applying to have the bill processed through us.
Sorry, Chair, just for clarity, did you say that the bill had been to cabinet and was then, sorry?
Yes.
Did you say that the bill had been to cabinet through you, Chair, had been to cabinet and was then referred back to the state law advisors where it's residing at the moment?
The procedure, I think the procedure of the issue.
It's been approved by the cabinet and now it's a procedural issue.
Yes.
One other thing, Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
At the end of last year, the Post Office Amendment Act, or bill, was tabled, was gazetted. We've heard not a word about it since then. Where is it?
By the executive.
Yeah. There was a gazette. And I think it was November or December.
For public hearing, for public input.
I presume so. I just don't know what happened. It was tabled, and then it's vanished.
It was not tabled, it was gazetted. So it's still within the system. I doubt if it will be here anytime soon. You know, I don't know. But perhaps next week, do you have an idea? Can you answer to the question? Ushelebe would have been the best person, so I checked him out. Apologies. Okay. Next week, Shalembe will come and respond. Just ask. We need an update of the bills that are in the pipeline, how far they are, just for the benefit of members. You can actually even, instead of coming talking to us, you can actually send us a memo. Just send us, circulate a memo to Ajira to say, there are these bills that are in the pipeline. This one is with the state law advisors. You are expecting it in the coming 5 days or 10 days to be formally lodged or tabled with the speaker and da-da-da-da, and where is the post office thing and where are the others? At least that kind of indication. Hood. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you.